there, friends. Welcome to Exolore, the show that helps you imagine other worlds with facts and science. I am your host, Dr. Moya McTeer. I'm an astrophysicist who studied pretty much everything in space, from planetary orbits to the radiation left over from the Big Bang to star formation and black holes and galaxy evolution. But I am especially interested in the motion of stars and how that affects the habitability of exoplanets, which are planets outside of our solar system. I am also a folklorist who specializes in building and analyzing fictional worlds, and this podcast is my way of sharing those worlds and that knowledge with you. So let's get started. Welcome back for part two of the live Stargate show. We have Peeves and Thieves coming up, where we discuss our favorite and least favorite things about the world building in Stargate. And later on, we have a very, very unintentional, but not entirely terrible, surprise blood sacrifice. So get excited for that, and let's jump into the show. I wanted to give everyone some time to talk about our peeves and our thieves, the thieves of our hearts, the things that we don't like and the things that we do like about the world building in Stargate. So I'm going to kick it off to Rob, who's going to tell us about how Stargate deals with infectious disease.
So, hey, everyone, poorly. let's get right into it. So this is a two-star general trying to contain an alien virus. This happens so many times. This is the government. You want better from people who are this protocol driven. We have an infirmary. This is very nice. They have a quarantine room, which is very nice. Apparently they have like a padded cell when they need it. Also very nice. Completely erratic application of quarantine principles. So they go into various worlds. They send a probe through first to make sure it's livable. Occasionally they'll do like an additional test to see if there's radiation or whatever. They make absolutely no attempt not to contract microbes, which they often do. And even worse, from like the point of view of the United States going out into outer space, they make no attempt to prevent us from bringing microbes to every planet in the galaxy, which is something that I definitely want to talk about later in the show. But one of the worst examples, and so I should also say I'm a swim coach, certified lifeguard. The things they get flex right there.
A bunch of people just went, ooh.
The weirdest thing is the things they get right. So there's a battle scene in one episode where there's a man dying, bleeding from the head and mouth. And Sam kneels down at his side, tilts his head back to open the airway, like CPR 101 head tilt, or otherwise the breath doesn't go in, and then proceeds to give mouth to mouth to a bleeding, like dying man, which you don't do. If they're bleeding out of the mouth, you don't do it. That's just like, it's in the rules. And it exposes her to an alien pathogen, which I won't go any further, but it's bad. It turns out pretty bad. And every time
it also turns out like it's good eventually in the long run.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, for certain parties. But the number of times where they decide this is a threat, and then out of their bags they produce full hazmat uniforms that they had with them the entire time, which would have prevented like 8 episodes from being significant, is infuriating. And then when they're wearing the hazmat uniforms, oh, this one just goes through it. Like, guess what? So, like, most of the physical matter in the universe has to be bound by other physical matter, but not this pathogen, the one time you wore hazmat uniforms. Sorry. So, infectious disease protocol at the SGC, you burnt. Like, no good.
Oh, but without it, there would be many fewer episodes of the show.
Absolutely.
So many of them rely on their terrible protocols. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they don't learn. Like, they do it right once, and then the next time they do it wrong again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing that didn't happen in real life. In any sort of way.
It's a good thing we always learn from the past and never commit the same mistakes twice.
Yeah, we never let any pathogens out of any place. Nope.
No, we don't.
Eric, what are your thoughts on the military connections in Stargate?
Well, listen, guys, I love the troops. I want to talk about the troops. Yeah, there's no real reason why the military needs to be involved in this, why it needs to be so Air Force forward, and yet it is. I really want to share a quote. This is on Quora. Quora.com on the internet right now. A retired colonel who spent 25 years as a space ops and ICBM maintenance officer said that he had worked with Stargate and had like written for them and became the civilian liaison officer. The question of why did they end up working with Stargate? Why did the U.S. Military work with Stargate so much? Because they asked nicely and they gave advice and it was just neat. Stargate apparently approached U.S. Air Force for advice on how to accurately portray Air Force personnel earlier in the first season, and then over time they just became bros forever. At that point, the uniforms were correct and changed as the real Air Force changed. For example, when the Air Force space operations personnel began wearing blue flight suits, so did the gate room staff in the show. When they shifted to green flight suits, so did the gate staff change in the show. And like, Listen, this isn't a new thing. This is happening all the way from Top Gun to Captain Marvel. And like, Marvel loves the military and loves framing how much the military is neat. And apparently even near their superheroes, we would follow the chain of command. But like, we're talking about like ancient alien tech. There is no reason this has to revolve around like colonels and the Air Force. And it's like, it's not even for the money. Because like, again, this is a Canadian and American show. It's not like the only way they could get Stargate up. It's like, oh man, we really need an angel investor. I hope that the Air Force shows up. Like, there's no reason. And yet they decided to get buddy-buddy with it, and it makes absolutely no sense. And now Moya is in love with a general.
Yes.
And this is the worst possible thing that could have happened.
I'm not mad about it. Like I said, sexy turtle.
And the PSYOP operation of Stargate got in your head, and now you think the U.S. military is hot.
Yes, but a man with an accent with a good moral compass.
You like, have a go.
And you'll remember that as the U.S. military goes around playing sheriff across the globe. It just doesn't even make any sense, especially it's a Canadian show. Why did they need this? It's insane.
I want to point out that I think that maybe Stargate's real, and by really playing into it being fiction, they're hiding the whole program. But like, because I mean, obviously you put it out to hide it.
Obviously. But they do that in the show. There are episodes where people try to make TV shows and movies based on the Stargate program in the show.
And you would never do that if there was a real Stargate program.
You would never do that.
But so just an episode I saw like recently, they had a cameo from 4-star general from the 90s who was the then Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he came in for like a cold open.
What?
I was just going to reference that. Yeah, because of how close they were. This guy. And then he ended up giving like the big speech to all the folks who like graduated. And it doesn't even make any sense because this guy just shows up out of nowhere. He's not in like the Stargate chain of command, but he's in like the real chain of command. So he has to do it. It is absolutely wild. And yeah, everyone on our Stargate really thinks it was a cover up. So congratulations, Moya. You love generals and Reddit. You did it.
Okay, I'll take that. For Stargate, I will take that. Yeah. We're going to move on to my biggest peeve, which I've alluded to, and it's the fact that everyone maybe just has like a universal translator in their ears all the time. There are so many amazing alien languages that they come up with for the show. Over there, you see a language inspired by Norse runes, and that's what the Asgard use. Up at the top, that's the Wraith language, and they're like cool organic technology that they use in their ships. And then you have the Owns language that's inspired by ancient Akkadian and Sumerian text here on Earth. They have all of these rich languages, and then Daniel just goes around talking to everyone in English, and it really bothers me. There are a couple potential explanations, like if you're being really generous, maybe Daniel has taught every single person at the SGC how to speak ancient Egyptian. Maybe, and they're just like translating it for us, the viewers, for convenience. But that's really generous. The only other possible explanation is that Gua'uld 10,000 years ago, before English was a language, went around stealing humans and then teaching them how to speak English. But yeah, this makes me mad about Stargate. But it is the only thing I could think of that I didn't like. So that's it. We are now going to take a 10-minute intermission, and when we come back, we will be less mean to the show, and we're going to talk about the things that we really like about their world building. But in the meantime, please go to the bar, get a drink, get some popcorn, tip your bartenders, and we will be back in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the best world building happens in video games, and gaming is just more enjoyable when you have gear to do it. So discover a new way to play your favorite games with the awesome gear supplied by our friends over at Inked Gaming. Inked Gaming has been a lead supplier of gaming goods since 2011, and for the past 10 years, they've delivered some of the best gaming gear imaginable. Inked Gaming introduces us to a whole new world of shopping, gaming, and creating. You'll find everything from playmats to mouse pads, dice bags, day totes, and much, much more. They even give you the creative freedom to express yourself and make your piece of gear totally unique with their custom design options. And for the creative people who are part of the Exolar family, I think that that's the part you're going to like the most. Inked Gaming is offering our listeners a special 10% off discount on your order. Just head on over to inkedgaming.com/exolore and use the code Exolore, that's E-X-O-L-O-R-E, at checkout. So go to inkedgaming.com/exolore and use the code Exolore for 10% off your order. Today, I'm excited to tell you about the Psychology Podcast, hosted by Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman. Dr. Kaufman is a world-renowned cognitive scientist and humanistic psychologist who explores the depths of human potential. He decided to step out of the academia ivory tower and share the latest psychological science that you can use to live a better life today. And that's definitely the type of career move that I can get behind. In each episode, Dr. Kaufman talks with inspiring and thought-provoking guests who will stimulate your mind, give you a greater understanding of yourself, others, and the world we live in. Hopefully, each episode will also give you a glimpse into human possibility. They recently did an episode exploring the truths of the human brain, and I learned a lot, actually. And I think that it's really important for world builders to know about psychology, because when you build a world, you also have to build the people who live in it. And understanding how people think and how we behave is really helpful when you're trying to build out a new world. So check out the Psychology Podcast by Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman, available wherever you get your podcasts. There's a new podcast that has joined the Multitude family, and it's called the Queer Movie Podcast. It's a queer movie watch party hosted by Rowan Ellis and Jazza John, and you can join them as they research and rate their way through the queer film canon, one genre at a time. From rom-coms to slashers, contemporary art house cinema to black and white classics, Queer Movie Podcast is a celebration of all things gay on the silver screen. New episodes come out every other Thursday, but not the same Thursdays as Exolore, which means if you start listening to Queer Movie Podcast, you can get an awesome Multitude show in your ears every Thursday of the month. So be sure to check out Queer Movie Podcast wherever you get your shows. Hello. Oh, thank you for that scattered applause. Feels so good.
The Stargate was so much nicer to us than this time.
It was. We are back, and we're going to be discussing some of the thieves of our hearts. It's hard to make the heart symbol when you're holding a microphone and a clicker, but it's thieves of our hearts. These are things that we really like about the show. My favorite thing about the world building is Stargate in Stargate is the way that it connects to mythology and folklore here on Earth. So there's an episode very early on when Daniel goes through and myths from around the world and compares them to figure out who the bad gods were and who the good gods were. And by doing that, he finds that there are actually multiple alien species who have come and interacted with humans over the course of human history. We didn't say anything in the first half of the show. I feel like I need to address it. Daniel Jackson does build a career out of claiming that the pyramids at Giza are actually landing sites for alien spaceships. He then is disgraced from academia, but that's actually why the Stargate program hires him. I just needed to address that. Aliens did not build the pyramids. That's a pretty racist idea. They could do it themselves. They didn't need aliens to help them, but that's just like how it works in the Stargate universe. So he does a lot of comparative mythology and finds that the system lords, the Gua'uld system lords, these are the bad guys who have taken over the galaxy, they come from and inspire mythology from all around Earth. So you have Kali, who poses as or inspires the Hindu goddess of destruction. There's Svarog, the Slavic god of the sky. There's Cronus, the Greek titan of time. They have so many different characters from mythologies from around the world, and I just think it's great world building the way that they used the negative space that's in the folklore and mythology we have on Earth, where, you know,
parts of mythology aren't explained, and then they inserted their own world building into those empty spaces. And I just think that that is A plus world building.
Oh, I really loved that particular episode because it reminded me of in Nightmare Before Christmas when Jack Skellington goes into like the Nether Sphere and then he sees all the holiday world doors and it's like, oh, there's the Easter door, the Christmas door, the Thanksgiving door, and I'm like, oh, it's just like that, and Jack Skellington is right off screen. No one points out that Stargate invented Jack Skellington and then it became Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, we don't talk about that
people
enough.
Should talk about that more.
This is the thing that stole my heart, and it's the relationship between these two. Daniel and Jack have very different backgrounds. Like we said, Jack is career military guy. Daniel is academic, like sticks to his own guns, believes what he can prove like empirically is true, and he sees it with his own eyes. And it leads them into a ton of conflict and this kind of beautiful mutual respect. Theirs is a relationship where each of them thinks that they're smarter than the other. And they're actually both right in a certain way. But Jack is the commanding officer. He has this intonation with Daniel. And it's sort of the apparent to their teenage child, where Daniel's like, I just want to stay here and translate this. Daniel, I just need another half an hour and I'll know what it says. Daniel. And it's just this beautiful... And he's like... But like, they do respect each other, but they also think each other are... ridiculous. It makes them good teammates. It comes to like there are points where they're like really butting heads. There are points where they like actually switch whenever it's convenient. Like literally whenever there's an alien child, Jack becomes the sympathetic one who like throws away all of his military training. He's like, no, that child. And like everyone else is like, wait, we have a protocol. And it's just nice when they switch. I love to watch the moments between these two specifically as they sort of like fight for their voice to be heard on the team. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really like beautiful bromance that blossoms over the 10 seasons. It's nice to see. Yeah. Highly recommend.
Can't wait to see what happens next. I knew she was going to do that.
Get ready for that MacGyver reference in the end of season 5. Okay, so we have touched on the fact that there is ancient aliens. And when we say ancient aliens, I don't mean like that one History Channel show where the guy whose hair looks like he got blown up in a Looney Tunes cartoon goes, it's some kind of interdimensional star child. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking...
That's great.
I spent a lot of time watching Ancient Aliens in college. I'm talking about, I love the world building of old alien technology. I mean, Moya did an entire timeline outlining this entire world. And the fact is that we're starting from something that was uncovered and was there, and it almost kind of undercuts the thing that I dislike so much, which is the fact that it's like a military thing, right? American, and I want to say American because like that's what we're talking about here, but like American military might is not the most powerful thing in the universe. In fact, they go around bumbling and blowing things up all the time, so it becomes like Always Sunny in Stargate Philadelphia most of the time. But like all these other folks are much more powerful, and I like how they really seed that in, and if even if they don't lean into it, it is in within the bones of the show. So the fact that they discover the Stargates and the fact that the U.S. military didn't like accidentally invent it and then stumble into a system, I think the fact that like they just have to deal with it is actually quite cool.
Yeah.
And do you want me to say interdimensional star child again?
I always want you to be saying that.
It's true. You should watch like the third season of Ancient Aliens because like then they're really reaching for anything.
Because they've run out of stuff to say.
Yeah, because
unlike the first season, which was rock solid.
Exactly. Well, at least they have their thing, which is like, oh, the mysteries of the world. They're like, oh, it was Ancient Aliens.
Right. And like Daniel Jackson said, the pyramids were built by aliens.
Right. And that's like season 1, episode 2, right? But by like season 3, they don't have anything, so they're like, Da Vinci was an interdimensional star child, and you can buy my book on Kindle. It's very funny once you get in deep, and like History Channel's like, yeah, Doc, keep giving me more.
Nice.
It's very funny.
Oh, yes. I like that you pointed this out in the world building, because I agree, it's a good example. The ancients didn't just put one Stargate on Earth. There are actually multiple, and over the course of the show, they uncover different Stargates, and I think that it's just a nice nice way of incorporating this long timeline of alien interference into the parts of our history that we don't know as well. And so we can like add in little bits of alien explanation. Good world building.
Thinking about like cable boxes, like there's a bunch of aliens on Earth and they're like, are Stargates not working? And like, oh, you can expect someone between 8 and 5 yeah. and like, and you just get like 3 of them in your back closet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are the Stargate techs going around doing maintenance on defunct Stargates doing? I want that spinoff show.
Oh my.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for Stargate Fios to come to my neighborhood.
Nice. We have another game, and this one is only for people from the audience. So I'm going to need 2 volunteers to come up and do a fun thing on stage. And there is a prize. I'm not just asking you to do this out of the goodness of your hearts, but you will get this 1,000-piece space puzzle.
Ooh.
Come on up.
1,000-piece space puzzle.
Yes.
Ooh.
Any other volunteers? I need one more.
Do you have to have seen it?
No.
Yay! Yay!
All right. Come on up. Yes. What's your name?
I'm Dan.
Dan. This is Dan. I'm going to ask your name even though I know it. What's your name?
Noah.
This is Noah. All right. So Dan and Noah, I have hidden these symbols around the room. Your job is to go and find these symbols as fast as you can and bring them back, assemble them in the right order so that we can dial to safety. And your time, you're not timed, but you can just go. It's a race. Go get the symbols.
It's happening so fast.
It's happening so fast.
They're going over the Stargates, and it all kind of looks like the Oregon
Chevron
Forest.
Chevron 1 locked.
I see. Oh, they're
Chevron
finding some
2
chevrons.
Locked. Chevron 3 locked.
It seems like
Chevron 4 locked.
Some other
it's never this fast
them.
In the show, I swear.
The other audience members are helping you. They're pointing you towards
Chevron 5
some that you're
locked.
Missing.
It's wild. It all looks like the Pacific Northwest.
Chevron 6. Chevron 7.
Maybe over here? All right. Maybe
Chevron 8.
Yeah.
Where
okay,
are we
great
going?
Job, Noah.
Chevron 9.
Why are there so
are
many
there
chevrons?
Any others?
Oh, look to your helpful bartender.
Is there one under my shoe?
Do you see any extras? Any that they're missing? I know I hid some over there.
Oh my gosh.
Moya, is this what Squid Game is?
Yes.
Is this Squid Game?
This is what Squid Game is.
Good. Now I know about Dune and Squid Game. Thank you.
Now I can cancel Netflix.
All right. There are 7 chevrons in each sequence.
Oh my gosh.
In each address.
That's so many.
Wait, you don't
there
need
are extras.
Enough. You don't need 7 each.
There
right?
are extras because I'm tricky. You yeah. each will have Come. 7.
Okay. Oh.
I feel
Well,
I think no
well.
I think they will won.
Oh no, you have to then put them in the right order.
Oh.
Once you find them and you have a minute because this black bar is going to cover up
oh,
the
snap.
Chevrons.
Oh no.
Wait, Noah, no, come over here and put them over here so everyone can see what you're doing.
This is Hold on one second. This is just like that time that alien technology.
Oh, you've mixed colors? What? Are you bleeding? What? Please don't bleed.
No.
Can we get a
It really is Squid Game. Moya's killing a guy.
I didn't mean to kill anyone.
No, I don't know how that happened. I'm sorry.
There are some extra chevrons in here just to trick you. I'm going to tell you right now that that is not in the sequence. Okay, and you're just throwing it away.
I like how this is like chopped, how you tried to put something on your finger so you could keep competing. I really appreciate
you can,
that.
You can phone a friend. You can get some help from the other audience members if you'd like. No?
That has your blood on it. Don't have other people involved.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. Yeah. Andrew, saving the day with some Band-Aids. All right, I'm gonna...
So, who there, died?
Is this what they mean when they say blood in the game? Like,
nice.
Noah,
skin
this
in the
is,
game.
What is this order that you're trying... Does it left to right? Is that it?
It's not linear.
Oh, okay.
Moya, is this an indictment of Stargate or of the American public school system?
Definitely the latter.
Okay, got it.
100%.
I think we all learned something here today.
I think we did all learn something, and I think, Dan, for literally putting your blood into this game, you get this puzzle. Thank you, Dan.
I'll
Incredible.
Thank you. Wow.
Moya, no one ever bled at my live
I
shows.
I know. This.
I wish I...
Now I'm going to... this is a reputation I'm building now.
Now we're going to learn if Exalor has better infectious disease control than Stargate.
Yes. Hopefully we do.
Do my downloads go up if someone bleeds?
That was not intentional. Thank you for playing, Dan. I hope you're okay. But both of you,
Dan
and Noah, I made a digital pack of Stargate bingo cards. So I will send that to you and Dan if you come see me after the show. Oh, that was so much bloodier than I was expecting it to be. let's just move on. So we are now going to describe some of our favorite worlds. We'll each summarize a world that SG-1 visits, and then we'll do some fun voting at the end, because it's election day.
Where's Eric Adams's apartment? What, he takes a Stargate there? Topical reference.
Good job.
For New York City only. My favorite Stargate world was actually from season 2, episode 14, where Stargate 1 visits a planet called Mishpacha. I really like the way that it all fits together. Mm-hmm. Like the world and the tech and the story all kind of fit together there. There, you know, it starts in a forest, but there is, of course, a lot of Egyptian iconography. That's because the Ga'uld are there in disguise of the Egyptian god Baal. And they're forcing the Jaffa, who is something that we didn't talk about. They're usually the subservient folks who are there building them to, you know, once again, build pyramids and statues in their name. So the SG-1 run into a Jaffa named Rabinu, who is a security guard there and finds a mysterious piece of technology. Rabinu says that the language of the ancients is on it, and it's actually a piece of weather tech, and it's going to prove that Baal is a false god.
Weather tech.
Which I think is very cool. Rabinu then brings the weather tech and SG-1 to before Baal and demands that the Jaffa be set free, because Baal is a false god, and then Rabinu turns on the weather tech in massive storm clouds. The worst FX, but I love it so deeply.
This is season 2, right? So 1998.
Yeah.
Like, we can get
so
them a
bad.
Break.
And then the clouds come in the sky, and then it starts to rain blood. And it's incredible. Rabinu brings down many more strange weathered patterns. There's frogs. There's dirty snow that's filled with bugs. The wildlife then gets very sick, and everyone starts to freak out. There's like a green pallor that they put on like cows that they film. It's very funny. The gold get boils and they get skin conditions, but Baal heals himself in the sarcophagus. Then there's like fire and thunderstorms and space locusts and darkness for 3 days. Eventually, Rabinu says that the Jaffa must leave, and he said that he's going to kill everyone with this weather tech. And finally, Baal says, oh, this isn't going to happen. Rabinu turns the knob all the way to 11 on the weather tech. And then, like, just boulders fall out of the sky and just straight up start killing people. Eventually, SG-1 and Rabinu steal a gold Hadak mothership, help the Jaffa escape. And as they are leaving, like, there's still storm clouds, but Rabinu throws the tech out of the blast door of the spaceship. And the weather tech subsides just for while they're flying out. But then, in some sort of, like, divine providence, they come back and they kill all of the the gold that are going to follow them. So maybe it was in fact made by the ancients. It was in fact divine in some sort of way. So just the terrible FX, the fact that like the weather tech and something that was ancient could affect the actual world, I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah, I love how ancient tech can be used to prove that the gold are false gods, right? Because they like clearly did not invent all of this really powerful technology.
Yeah. I also like that even in season 2, like, Ra is like, no, Ra's a false god, but Baal, definitely a real person, guys.
Definitely. Yeah, they overthrow many Gua'uld system lords over the course of the show. They disprove a lot of false gods.
I like how many times, like, so many Gua'uld can't figure something out, and then it's, like, 30 minutes with Sam, or, like, literally Jack knocks it off a platform, and then, like... Yeah. Reboots. Yeah. And you're like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah. Slap it and then it starts working.
Yeah.
There was a lot of like them trying to get near the weather tech, and then Rabinu was like, no, go away. This is divine. You can't touch it. Sorry. You can't touch it.
Sorry.
So this is one of my favorite worlds. This was also season 2, in an episode called One False Move, which I think is like really telling, because in terms of the actual episode, it's sort of a disease mystery. And so I didn't say this earlier. I teach a class on infectious diseases to undergrads. So I'm very invested in how infectious diseases are investigated and how they're contained on Earth. And this is a story where Basically, what happens on the planet, they land, they kind of, with a remote control airplane, they knock over one of these white things that's like a flowery plant. They call it a plant. It looks like a fungus, whatever. It's a living thing. And they damage it. They go to the planet. Like, someone helps them carry it. They get oil on their hands. One of the Stargate team starts bleeding on them. Daniel's sneezing everywhere.
Love it.
Yeah, so they've introduced all these potential pathogens, and then the people on the planet start dropping down. Like, not dying, but getting really sick. It's like, what happened? And we find out, spoilers, that these plant-like things emit a low-frequency sound, and that sustains these native kind of painted individuals. And they, in turn, sing. And that singing stimulates the plants to flower. And so it's this beautiful symbiotic relationship. And the thing I like about it is that symbiosis is such a real thing that living organisms do with one another. And it takes so much time. And to think about, like, okay, here's like another arboreal, like forest world kind of thing. But living in the plains of it are these two species. We don't meet anything else besides these two species. They, at the top here, the paint is ornate. That's a cultural decoration, but they are not human. And we actually get one back in Stargate, and they get like an MRI and like organs in all the different places. Like, I can't help, don't know what to do with this. So a totally different species and a totally different kingdom of life, basically. And trying to imagine back how this planet got here, right? Thousands of years ago, there were proto-plant type things and proto-humanoids, and probably neither of them had any kind of sonic behaviors. And one of them had to start making sounds first, and that sound somehow affected the other one in a positive way. And so there were probably plants like these that were making all different sounds, and there was some benefit to benefiting the humanoids. And then the humanoids would, I guess, decide culturally to make the sound back, some kind of collective organismal decision. Because they also didn't exhibit any sign of language. I don't think there was any writing on this planet.
No.
So they were considered a very primitive civilization. And the only vocalizations they made were these kind of very, I would say, beautiful.
This beautiful, like Moya thought the general was beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's
in the eye of the beholder,
taste.
Eric, oh, or yeah, the ear, as but it might be.
It's a very like countertenor sound that they all emit, sort of in a harmonic way together. And so the fact that they've developed this, what's really cool about this actually is that the plants have an adaptation that's called a physical adaptation. They produce a sound, like a set wavelength. And actually, when they get hit by the ship, it damages them and they make the wrong sound. And that's why they get sick. But that's
because
a physical.
One plant gets damaged?
Apparently. And it may be sort of like that massive living forest in the United States where they're all connected through some root system. We don't really know too much about these plant organisms. But what we do know is that when one gets damaged, it changes the frequency where they're living. And that change in frequency is deleterious to their health. But that sound that they make is physical, insofar as it's not something learned. Like, we assume the plant just emits this sound all the time. But what the humanoids do in response is a behavioral adaptation, something that they've kind of acquired a memory for culturally or through some kind of inheritance, that they know in certain situations, if they make this sound, these plants will flower. And so you're seeing coevolution of two different traits that's really kind of focused on. And it also is totally unclear how this helps either one of them. Like, why one low pitch sound makes you like able to walk, but if you change it, you drop dead. And then if they sing, the plants flower. And then like, are there bees? Like, what happens with the flowers? Like,
they are the pollinators. Yeah.
This is an Exolore. This is how you know it's an Exolore live show, because someone asked, "Are there bees?
Where are the bees?
How would this work? Where are the bees? I need to know."
And like, even the fact that they're so human, and like maybe explained by the ancients depositing humans a long, long time ago, like,
right,
not just
many,
like
millions of years.
Yeah, not just thousands, but millions. And then they diverge a lot. But there's a lot of questions physiologically that I don't think are answered. But it's really interesting to see just these two species and the interaction that we are kind of taught here, that one requires the other sonically. In both cases. And I think that's just really cool, because you don't really see that. A lot of planets are humanish, like something interesting, something different, sometimes something tectonic, sometimes something climatological. But this is one where it's like, no, like totally different, like sound-based interactions between two different kingdoms. And like, I, as far as I've gotten, never see anything quite like this again. So this one really stood out for being like a unique built world. And it's also like a murder mystery. You don't know what happened. There's like five red herrings in the whole episode. You're like, what's happening? Like, why are they done? And then also everyone is getting affected on the humans get affected by the sound too. So they get really pissy at each other and they just lose it, which is great for that Daniel Jack interaction I was talking about earlier. Oh, them having like a fight for no reason. Just beautiful, beautiful interactions. But yeah, this episode was just excellent for the way that it just kind of, it took everything we know about existence and they're like, but what if sound was different? And I love that.
Yeah, that's really nice. You're right. There isn't another world like this in all of Stargate. So it's a special one.
Rob, I think it's really rude that you used photos from Bonnaroo 2016 to tell people that this was your favorite episode.
That's actually me dressed like Daniel Jackson. Yes.
Yeah, I'm in the back seeing Modest Mouse all the way back there. I'm at the what tent.
Nice.
Oh, and this is just a very different... They brought one back, they put on some electrodes, and that's totally not what an MRI looks like, don't worry. But yeah, that's the heart, like, in the middle of the gut.
Yeah, so they have very, very different anatomy. Yes, this is one of my favorite worlds from Stargate. It's called Orbon. It's from Season 3, Episode 5, titled Learning Curve. And this is pretty early on in Stargate, so they haven't figured out how to make Naquadah generators. They don't have sources of extreme power. They don't have any way to power a Stargate to get to a different galaxy. It's really cool because they're in this like stumbling learning stage in the show. And then they go to this planet, Orbon, and it's one of the most technologically advanced civilizations that they've come across so far. In just a matter of decades, they've gone from like a very pre-industrial society all the way to being as advanced, if not more advanced, than we are here on Earth. And the way they did this was that about 50 years ago, Orbanian scientists discovered little nanites. These are tiny little robots that they can implant into people's brains. And they totally changed the way that people learn on this planet. So they have this special class of children called Orone. When Orone are born, they're implanted with millions of nanites. And then those Orone children who don't really need to sleep or eat or do any sort of like living survival thing that human children need to do, they become experts in different topics. So this one little girl, Marin, is an expert in Naquadah generators. So she teaches Sam how to use a generator, but then all of these Orone children go through a process called the ovarium, where their nanites are taken out of their brains and then transplanted into the rest of the society's citizens. So this planet has totally forgotten how to learn the old-fashioned way. They don't even understand the concept of teaching. Jack says something like, what do you do for fun? And Marin goes like, fun? What's fun? And then Sam tries to ask her how something with the Naquadah generator works. She's like, teach me how this works. And Marin goes, teach? What is that? So they just totally have changed something that I think is pretty fundamental about the human experience, the ability to take knowledge from one brain and transfer it to another through teaching. They just don't have that. But then Marin goes back. She goes through the ovarium. So everything she learned in her nanites is transplanted into the brain of all the other citizens. And because she had this cool Earth experience where she went and she saw a normal middle school classroom, because Jack kidnaps her.
Good.
So they just like go over.
Yeah. Just shout out to the U.S. military. Over. Love. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the thing that just a quick interjection about Jack. He happens to be a good person, but he has so much power and so little accountability that if he weren't a good person, it would be so terrible for the entire SGC. He kidnapped this little girl because he didn't want her to go have her brain sucked out, which is good. And then because he kidnaps her and shows her what a middle school classroom is like, she goes back and teaches everyone on her home planet about the concept of teaching. And it's really nice.
Jack also like casually walked up to a playground in a leather jacket like a creeper
oh God,
and then got invited into the school.
Yeah.
Like,
Well, I mean, there's backstory. So he brings Marin, this little girl, and he's just standing there in his fighter pilot jacket. And the kids are totally nonplussed. They're actually very excited to see him. And there's backstory, too, because several episodes earlier, SG-1 found this little girl abandoned on a planet that was mistreated by one of the Goa'uld.
Jack does this so much.
He should be court-martialed like every other episode.
His first best quality is that he fucks. And his second best quality is that he steals children regularly. Come on.
But only for the good of the children.
Yes.
Oh. Shout out to the U.S. military. Love right. The truth.
She literally was asking to be sent back home. She was like, no, I want to go through the ovarium. Please send me back. I don't want to go. And then he kidnaps her against her will. It's bad. But it works out.
I'll also point out that no fun and like complete inability to teach sounds like grad school, maybe? Anybody? Oh.
No? All the grad students in the audience thought that was really funny. Yeah, yeah,
we're
yeah.
We're out of it, so we can joke now. But yeah. You'll be there soon, the people in the audience who are still in grad school. So those are our three worlds. We have Orban, this world that doesn't have a name with the singers.
Yeah, it's got a PX, P90X, maybe?
Quiet world. And Miss Basha.
Mishbacha.
We have these three worlds. I'm wondering, from the audience, give a little cheer if your favorite is the world with the singers, the one that you find most interesting of the three.
Yeah.
Solid.
The one with the weird plants. Love that.
What about Mishbacha? Anyone like that world?
Extreme silence.
Wow. Wait, so are we just a bunch of Orban fans here? Okay. And then we have a bunch of abstaining people.
What do the crickets think?
It's weird that the audience jumped and cheered of child kidnapping. They loved that. They're like, oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a stand for the U.S. military, and some members of the audience are stands for kidnapping.
Yeah, Moya and I are going to be recruiting for you to see you to join the U.S. Air Force. By the back, just join us.
Okay, so Orban is clearly the crowd favorite, but I have a little twist. I have a secret that I need to share with you. One of us has been lying this whole time and is not a fan of Stargate at all. It's an appropriate reaction. Thank you. The loud gasp. So one of us is not a fan of Stargate. I'm wondering if you can figure out who it is. Who thinks it's me?
Moya just went on Wikipedia and copied that logarithmic timeline.
Everything I know from Stargate fan pages.
No true fan would ever think of the show in that fashion. I think that's fair.
Yeah. All right, so it's not me. You got it. Who thinks it's Eric? No one.
No one.
A couple people.
Oh, okay.
Okay, a few people think it's Eric. Who thinks it's Rob?
I think Rob's lying.
All right. Well,
he said his name was Ra earlier, and I don't trust him.
Rob has tried to pretend to be a false god here on this stage, a gold poser. Okay, so one of these planets, one of these people is not like the other. It is Mishbacha.
It was me.
It was Eric. Eric has never seen an episode of Stargate in his life.
I have never seen an episode of Stargate. I also want all of you to know that instead of watching Stargate, I watched a lot of One Piece, the anime. There are over 1,000 episodes. There's a stretchy man, and it's pirates, and it's an anime, and it's wonderful. Also, the story of Mishbacha was just the Passover story.
So if it sounded familiar, that's probably
why. It was just Passover. I just said Passover.
Yep, that is not a real Stargate world. Inspired by a real Stargate world, there is a real season 2, episode 14, where they have this cool weather tech called the Touchstone, but it is not the Passover story.
When we were putting this together, I'm like, okay, and there's a part where the Jaffa put blood on their doorsteps so that God knows it's there are the Jews, and Moya's like, no, don't do that. That will give it away.
They had one night's worth of Naquita, and it lasted for 8. It was incredible.
Oh, that would have been so good. So good. We'll work it into the next time you pretend to be a Stargate fan.
It's true, and I won't even tell Rob that's a different Jewish holiday. I'm not even going to tell him that.
Well, thank you all so much for coming to the show and listening to us talk about Stargate and pretend to know about Stargate. Eric is the head of creative at Multitude and, like he said, the DM for Join the Party, a podcast, a real play podcast inspired and powered by the rules of Dungeons and Dragons. I highly recommend it. Check out Join the Party and all of the other Multitude shows. And Rob here is one part of three for the Fax Machine podcast. There are three trivia hosts. Each episode tells you three cool facts. I have learned so much by listening to Fax Machine. And then they do a fun trivia quiz at the end. So I cannot recommend any of these podcasts highly enough. Please check them out. And yeah, continue to listen to Exolore too, because I also recommend my own podcast. So thank you for coming. And yeah, that's all we have.
Moya, you have to do the famous Exolore sign off.
That's a wrap? That's a wrap. I think I know what you mean.
No, I'm not. I was putting you on the spot.
Oh,
everyone
yes.
Can applaud now.
Yay!
Thank you.
This episode of Exolore was edited by Misha Stanton. The cover art is by Stephen J. Reisig. The transcript is by Aizer Moss. And the music is from purpleplanet.com. Exolore is a member of Multitude Productions, an independent podcast collective and production studio. I highly recommend checking out the other Multitude shows. All you have to do is type Multitude into the search bar of your favorite podcast app. If you want to support me and my world-building work, the first way to do that is to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. It's free, you don't need any sort of Apple device, and it really does make a difference and help the show grow. Second, you can support me on Patreon. Your monthly support would make it possible for me to continue working on this passion project of mine. So if you're able, please head on over to patreon.com/exolorepod. Again, that's patreon.com/exolorepod, if you can. Be sure to follow Exolore on Twitter or Instagram at ExolorePod. And if you like this episode, share it with your friends and subscribe to the show, because that way you can catch me next time on another world.